I mean, at the end of the day, like, yes, production matters, and having something that really, like, hits and is memorable and different and all the things that make a good production good, like, that's so important. But, you know, it really comes down to the song. If it's a great song, it's going to land.
Welcome to Boston Music Explorer. I'm Dan.
I'm Jack.
And we're the Barton Brothers. We're songwriters and performers that are newly based in Boston.
This podcast is our excuse to talk to people who are doing interesting things in the Boston music scene. If you're doing something cool, we want to hear about it.
If you like what you hear and want to send some love to the algorithm gods, please subscribe, rate, and leave a review. And enjoy this episode of Boston Music Explorer. Today on the podcast, we have Adam Sickler, who is a singer-songwriter, music producer, and youth mentor. He's an overall good dude and the perfect example of a musician who's hustling in the local scene, making great music, and working to build community, which is what we're all about. And because of that, our chat hits a lot of the key topics that you might want to hear about if you're an indie singer-songwriter working to get established in your local scene, whether that's in Boston or elsewhere. This is only episode 4, obviously, but already you can start to see some through lines of people who have really reaped the benefits of a local scene in large part because of the care and energy that they put into it. And I think that definitely applies to Adam. He works as a producer and an engineer at the Boys and Girls Club in Waltham, Mass. As his day gig. We talk a good bit about that, including the American Idol events that he has put up for the last several years, partly with the help of grants from the Massachusetts Cultural Council. And he also hosts a weekly open mic at Article 24 in Brighton, which is an awesome gig. Those are Sundays from 9 p.m. to midnight for anyone interested. And in his musical career, Adam just released a brand new single called The Cure, which you can find anywhere you might want to find it. And the music video is on his Facebook. We kind of glossed over this, but it's clocked 500,000 views on Facebook in under a month. So we talk about his promotional campaign surrounding the song, indie release strategies in general, which I can't get enough of. If you want to check out more of Adam Sickler, AdamSicklerMusic.com, on Facebook at Adam Sickler Music, and on Instagram at Adam Sickler. On a personal note, Jack and I just put out our newest song. It's called Overgrown, which you can now find on streaming. Links are in the show notes for that, or you can just look up the Barton Brothers. And we'd love if you'd rate and review this show, Boston Music Explorer, which goes a long way while we're trying to get this thing established. And with that, enjoy the show. How long have you been in Boston?
Since 2012.
Okay. You came here for school?
Yeah, I did a couple semesters at Berkeley.
Okay,
and then
cool.
I just stuck around.
Yeah.
That seems to be the way that people do it. A couple semesters at Berkeley.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Is there like a pretty good reason that people just kind of like dip in and out, get what you need, and kind of start to do your own thing?
What
is it about Berkeley that has that effect on people?
If you think about it, like, what is a degree in songwriting going to get you? I don't really know if I have a good answer for that.
Right.
So you go for the skills, but you know, you get to a point where you feel like you have what you need, and then you just kind of run with it and do your own thing.
Right.
And it's also like really expensive. Like that's a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I already had a college degree when I got there,
gotcha.
So I was kind of not trying to take on more debt. So I got a job, and it's kind of a blessing in disguise. They don't let you go part time. Except for the summer semesters.
Right.
So I had to make a choice of whether I wanted to get a full-time job or continue spending money to, you know, learn about music rather than do it.
Right.
Was your initial degree in music too?
No, actually, I was a psych major.
Oh, nice. Where'd you go?
Springfield College.
In?
Springfield, Mass.
Springfield, Mass. Nice. Yeah.
Gotcha. Very cool. Well, we just kind of start everything running in case we catch gold at the beginning, but want to give you a chance to like kind of start from scratch. Introduce yourself.
Sure, man. Well, so obviously my name is Adam Sickler, singer-songwriter, producer, youth mentor. That's my official resume tagline.
I like that.
What I do, obviously, aside from the musical part, my day gig is I run a recording studio for kids at the Boys and Girls Club out in Waltham. So it's been a really cool experience being able to kind of do the duality of being an artist and sharing what I've learned as an artist through that position. It's been a really cool. You know, I left school. I was at Berkeley for a while, and I left school to go pursue that full-time job. And it was really nice because I was still pretty green in, you know, production and recording and even, like, as a performer. Like, I'd been doing it for a while, but you know, I didn't really have a chance to be out, like, every weekend playing, cutting my teeth, doing recording sessions and really, like, digging in and doing it. So this is a really cool chance for me to hone my skills and, you know, along the way, just learn alongside of these kids. It's been a really rewarding experience, and I didn't go into it thinking I'd be in the field as long as I have. But hey, it's been really cool, and it's been really helpful for me as an artist to grow and develop.
Yeah, where did you get your origins in terms of learning to produce? Like, was that something you were interested in, like, all growing up, or?
Well, I mean, I always wanted to make my own record, and you know, every time I tried to do it, I just found, like, I wanted it to sound better. You know, it just didn't sound quite pro. So, like, I would get excited about something I did for about a week, and then I'd listen to it, you know, side by side with a commercial track, and be like, how do they do that thing?
Yeah.
So I never lost that. I'm still trying to find how they did that thing.
Yeah.
That makes it sound like extra shiny and special.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I hope to God that I never get to the point where I'm like, all right, that's good.
Good enough.
I hope that never happens.
I guess I made it. No more songs.
I think
songs.
I found that something special, shiny, and I retire and right off into the sunset. Yeah.
Like, around what time do you feel like you started feeling proficient, you know?
When I could start charging money for what I do.
Right.
That's probably, you know, I think that was, I mean, for a little while I felt like a fraud, but, you know, eventually, you know, when people are like, yeah, you're doing a great job, then, all right, cool. You know, if it's good enough for them, then.
Do you ever, for mixing and mastering, do you ever shop out elsewhere, or do you ever do everything in-house?
Well, for my own productions, I'll do my demos, and then we'll work with somebody else outside of my realm for that. For the latest single, The Cure, we actually worked with a guy named Jack Joseph Puig. He was really cool.
That's a name.
It was wild, man. Like, we flew out to LA, and his house in Pasadena is incredible. It's like, you know, he's got this crazy courtyard, and it looks kind of like The Godfather, with like the big fountain and like all that crazy stuff. And then his mixing room is just this big, like, cathedral ceiling with these these different international flags and the wall of gear. Like, I look at it and I just see, like, you might as well just have briefcases of money.
Right,
like, just like signs. so intense.
That's amazing.
I've never seen a studio with that much gear, let alone someone's house.
Right.
It was crazy. Because the guy's he's a total gearhead.
Yeah. What was your connection to him?
We reached out. I work with a friend of mine from high school, started a record label. It's called Nicky Urban. And we've been kind of working together on a couple tracks, trying to, you know, see what we can stir up. And so my friend reached out to Jack, just shot him an email, and he agreed to work on the song.
That's awesome. Well, we were just listening.
We were just commenting on how well produced it is. It's really impressive.
It sounds gorgeous. Yeah,
thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Are you going back out there? Like, are you going to do a whole record with him? What's the plan for this new single?
We're not really sure exactly yet. I think we're going to be doing the tracking probably in New York because it's way more local and easier. I'd like to work with him as a producer. I'd like to work with... I think the next step for me is working with a producer, like someone who is not me. Because, I mean, I can do it, but, you know, the music industry changes so fast and you need something that's just different. So, I mean, I could write the songs, I could do some basic arrangements, but I need someone who's going to add, like, an X factor, someone who's going to come in and just say, like, we're going to try this one thing that might be a little bit outside the box, but if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, well, hopefully it doesn't crash and burn, but...
Yeah, I could see us really needing that because we record everything in here and then, you know, ship it out for mastering, but we have a super similar sound palette as, you know, just like... taste and arrangement and songwriting and all those things as brothers. And so being able to like get someone else in the room that would have an idea that we wouldn't at a certain point. Like.
Yeah. Incredibly valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking is next, I think it would probably be an EP next.
Okay. Any timeline on that? Or you're just kind of finishing up the next round of songs?
Yeah. I mean, we're still in campaign mode for The Cure. We had some issues with the distribution company. That's the problem when you're kind of independent.
Yeah.
Because we try to work with this company called The Orchard, which is owned by Sony, and they can't dedicate as many resources to people who aren't pulling in like serious dollar signs,
right.
Which, you know, it's the nature of being an independent artist. Yeah. You know, you're not really doing that until you hit that critical mass.
Yeah.
What does your campaign look like for this song so far, or what are you planning for it?
So it's a very heavily, social media based. A lot of promotion on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah.
The distribution company also once everything is kind of in full swing, they do things like they'll put it on, I don't know, your Yahoo Music homepage kind of thing. Maybe get it on some playlists on YouTube or whatever. But it's very heavily what we can control is what happens on Facebook and Instagram, because you know you can put promotional money behind it, you can target things, you can identify who your audience is. So just relying on what we have access to, that's really kind of the key
so
piece.
Far, yeah.
And then you're working on a video for that as well?
We have a video done.
Okay. Yeah.
So cool. That's available on Facebook. I'm not sure if it's on YouTube just yet, because That was a distribution company thing.
Yeah.
We kind of had a little bit of an issue with the release date, kind of didn't happen on time, and there was a file format issue for the video, but you know. All that aside.
Yeah, no, we're very familiar. We put out a single last week and had the same thing, pushing back release dates and... Mm-hmm. And snags with distributors and band pages and all that sort of thing is exhausting. It's like makes me think about how nice it would be to be able to like pay somebody to just
to not have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah. Well, even when you pay somebody, sometimes it doesn't work that way.
Well, there
I'll
you go. Exactly.
I mean, there's a reason they say if you want it done right, you got to do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, that's not for no reason.
Yeah. I'm super curious about your day gig. What does that entail?
So, I mean, every day is a little different.
Uh-huh.
It's always an interesting struggle for me as an artist because I tend to be so loosey-goosey and not, like, wanting to be structured. But, you know, typically, like, what you'll see is a combination of, you know, guitar lessons, you know, informal or formal, you know, some group workshops, a lot of recording. Obviously, it's a recording studio, but it really has that drop-in feel where a kid could just come in and not have any real prior experience, and then I'll just sit down with them and say, hey, what are you into? Let's make some stuff. That's nice. Really what the fun part of the job is.
That's really interesting. Is it like, you know, a day at a time people come in, or is it 6-week camps that people sign up for, or
so,
how is that structured?
It's a little bit of a hybrid. We don't really have a ton of programs that require like a weekly commitment or anything. But I work with the kids that are already in the building for the most part. So they'll just come by as part of their day. They're like, "Oh, well we can go to the studio today, or we can go to the gym." You know, they pick. And it's really cool when kids choose to be doing music.
Oh, so it's like a community center that has a recording studio.
Exactly.
That's really cool.
That's amazing.
But there's definitely, you know, there's some more structured things. I run a program called Waltham Idol, as you can imagine, based off of the American Idol show. But it's way cooler than American Idol.
Objectively.
It is way cooler. I was on American Idol this year. It was pretty cool.
Oh, awesome.
I didn't make it past the judge auditions, but... Lionel Richie said yes. So
seriously?
Take that to your grave.
Oh, good enough for me.
Yeah, put that on your gravestone. Lionel Richie said yes. That's amazing.
Yeah, but so I always had fun with these things. I'm not really crazy about competitive art, but I do see like it's a lot of fun and it's exciting and it's a good chance for, you know, kids to really like be nervous about something. And that's important. That's an important experience to be nervous. You know, you can't be comfortable or else you're never going to grow. So it's just like, it's three rounds. We'll do an audition round in front of, you know, it's a cappella in front of three judges, one of them being me as the show producer. Second round, we step it up, add like a karaoke track or like self-accompaniment on guitar or piano in front of a live audience. Maybe like 150 people or so. And then the final round, we go all out and I'll hire a professional band and we'll do pro lights and sound. And
that's so sick.
It's really cool. You can actually find, there's tons of clips on YouTube for it. We've been doing it for 5 years now.
Wow, that's a huge undertaking.
I've been really fortunate the past couple of years. I've been getting some grants from the Mass Cultural Council to put it together.
His response been pretty good?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we get like 300 people out for the finals every
year. That's fantastic.
Imagine if it was promoting your own shows was that easy.
Seriously.
Yeah, right? It seems like there's a lot of like great opportunities in Boston, in the Boston area, of like arts grants and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Has that been your like your experience just with the American Idol, getting grants for that? Have you applied for any others as a solo or anything else you do?
I haven't really done a ton for my personal side of things, but I mean, I was part of this thing called the, let me see if I can remember what the acronym stands for. It was META, Music Educators and Teaching Artists Fellowship. It's essentially professional development and grant opportunities. It's a fellowship through, it was through Mass Cultural Council, and the Klarman Family Foundation also helped, they funded it essentially. It was really cool because they, along with doing like every month or so, we would get together and do like a workshop where there was educational components and just some networking and getting to know some of the other teaching artists and educators in the area. There was opportunities for professional development grants now. Like, for example, I took one of those and I went to the Dar Williams Writing a Song That Matters retreat, which was really cool, like artistically, and really enriching, you know, as a teaching artist as well, because, you know, you see how kind of how they create that space, that creative space, and you can kind of adapt that to your own program.
I'm unfamiliar with that. What's that songwriting retreat?
It's called Writing a Song That Matters. It's put on by Dar Williams.
And is where's that hosted? Where do they put you?
So I went to there was two locations. There was the Garrison Institute was the one that I went to, which is in Garrison, New York. Mm. And Storm King Retreat Center, I want to say.
Okay. And writing a song that matters, is that like as in something that will be remembered or like a cultural message? What's the...
See, I don't think that was ever defined necessarily, but if I were to try and put my finger on what they're trying to get out of that, is it's writing a song that really achieves its purpose, I guess. Mm.
Is that something you like have taken with you and think about when you have written songs?
Oh yeah, and I never feel like I quite get it.
Yeah,
but I think that's an important part of the chasing it process.
That's a very cool concept for a retreat.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding. And you do a good amount of playing around town, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just solo? Do you ever play with a band? What's your setup?
I do a little bit of everything. I do a lot of solo stuff. Some like small combo things, because it's, you know, it's tough to take a band on the road. It just gets expensive.
Yeah.
You know, I want to make sure that everybody is compensated for their time. So it's tough to bring my five piece with me. But, I think mostly around town, I host an open mic every week at Article 24 in Brighton. And, a lot of my connection to the music scene is just through that. That kind of scene, just the open mic kind of community.
I mean, so it's how long have you been in charge of that?
A little over a year now.
Is it something that you took over for somebody?
Yeah, Joe Frober was originally hosting it on Thursday nights. Then they wanted to switch it to Sundays, and he couldn't do it. So they asked me if I wanted to fill in for a little bit, and then Joe said, "Hey, man, like, I would you want this full time?" So I took it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. Well, you know, great opportunity. Like every week, you have it on the schedule that you're going to be like meeting cool new people, and
it's great.
And like putting your music in front of a new batch. So it's a cool thing to be able to be a part of.
Did you get started locally with the open mic circuit? Kind of, is that how you got?
Yeah,
around.
I think you could probably hear this from any singer songwriter around here. My first real positive experience was at the Lizard Lounge.
Mm.
Playing there was my second open mic in town. My first one I did was what's it called? Cantab Lounge.
Mm-hmm. At Central Square.
Yeah, yeah. But it was when I played at the Lizard Lounge that I really felt like kind of at home. Like there was something there. They really got a great thing going on at the Lizard Lounge.
And do you play that one pretty frequently then?
I try to play that whenever I have a new song.
Nice.
And it just doesn't happen often chronic. Chronic editor syndrome.
Yeah.
We don't know anything about
that. Yeah, not at all. 8 months for a new single.
Yeah. What have you... I mean, that's a really interesting thing to talk about. Is there anything that you do to try and close your eyes and push past that sort of thing to let something breathe?
Well, I mean, it's something I've been working on a lot lately. I think the biggest thing that I'm starting to come to grips with is that, I mean, and this might seem obvious, but if you're a writer, if you're a songwriter, you can't hide. Like, you got to be able to just put it all up front and not be ashamed of whatever it is, whatever your story is. Because, you know, you can't hide. You have to be honest with your songs, or else, you know, it's just like, it's going to be BS. Like, nobody's going to believe it. And I don't believe it if I'm not, you know, fully open myself up to the song and being totally honest.
Yeah. We definitely struggle with that as writers. And I think the best that we've ever, like, accidentally mentally tricked ourselves was writing a batch of songs that we pictured someone else singing. Mm. And so when we picture us, like, being behind the lyrics, like, oh, I gotta mean every word of this. Like, this
and you has think to be, of all your friends analyzing your lyrics word by word when yeah. they're probably not gonna do that.
Yeah, like, this gotta be the most, like, honest, creative thing that has ever happened. But when you picture, like, you know, I don't criticize other people's songs that way. So when I write a song that I picture someone else singing, that I don't have to, like, feel accountable to every turn of phrase, that's...
Well, you know, it's funny. I feel like if someone else were to sing a certain line, I'm trying to think of a good example, but I don't have one right now. You know, some of the lines that you come up with, like, if you heard someone else singing that, you'd be like, that's fine, that's a great line. But somehow, when you're the one doing it, there's like, just so much more. Like
my friend from college is going to know that was crap.
Yeah, exactly. You have, like, one looming critic in the back of your head, whether that's yourself or a friend.
It's always me. I'm always the worst critic.
That's probably a good way
someone
to go about it.
Someone with a yardstick labeled cliche, just, like, smacking my ankles in the back. Like,
not again.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, I found the antidote for that most commonly is, you know, you can't be afraid to write crap. I think that was the most helpful piece of advice I ever got from one of my songwriting professors. It was Scarlett Keys said that.
Nice.
Just don't be afraid to write crap.
Yeah, that's huge.
You gotta put it out there. I was actually watching I was watching a little YouTube video this morning. John Mayer talking about songwriting with mm-hmm. some dude. I don't know where it was. It looked like it was some radio station or something. Mm-hmm. But he said, I think there was something along the lines of, like, you got to be fearless. And then he just started, like, playing the guitar riff, just making some stuff up and just singing. And, like, he just went with it and just kept going with it. At first, it was very stream of consciousness, but as he kept going, it developed into something that was like, actually, that's really good, right, man. So, and
when you close your eyes and, like, jump into some stream of consciousness that might not work.
Yeah,
and
you got to get warmed up to it, too. Like, there's so many times when I've been sitting down trying to write a song and I just can't get the first line. Like, mm-hmm. the first line. Seems like, I mean, it's so wide open. You can say anything, but, like, for some reason, that's so daunting.
Yeah.
So as long as you say something.
Yeah, and the first line tends to be really open to cliches, too, because mm-hmm. it's just like, what is this song about? So I feel like, yeah. I don't know, I've enjoyed kind of starting with the hook and then going from there, because at least that sets the tone.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, if I'm just, like, blank page starting to write a verse, I'm like, I got nothing. Yeah. I can't do this.
It's not something I've completely tackled yet either, but I really like the idea of starting with, like, a hook and, like, a concept and working backwards from there. Have you heard the podcast And the Writer Is?
No.
It's this pop songwriter named Ross Golan, who, you know, is one of those LA songwriters, like Ariana Grande, Flo Rida, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. He's, like, in the rooms with pop stars, and he brings in other professional songwriters. And this one that he did that has stuck in my head is with a guy named Desmond Child, mm-hmm. who wrote with Bon Jovi and Ricky Martin and I don't know who else. Mm-hmm. Like,
those are the two that I remember too.
Yeah, and he talks about kind of starting with the hook and working backwards too, because, you know, if you come into the studio and say, I've got an idea for a song, it's called Livin' La Vida Loca, like, that song writes itself. Like, right. All right, we're done here. Like, you know, it's going to be great if you've got, like, a really, like, interesting concept.
Yeah. And, I mean, do you find yourself being, with that in mind, somewhat prolific songwriting-wise, now that you've kind of gotten past that barrier of letting yourself write stuff you're not proud of, or is that, have you found that to be helpful for you?
Well, again, it's just always been the case of, like, if you don't start somewhere, you're never going to get anywhere.
Right.
You know? Every day you go to the gym, you're not going to be, like, setting PRs. You're not right. going to be lifting more weight than the next day. Not every time.
Yeah.
But, like, if you don't show up,
yeah, you gotta
nothing's
going
to happen.
It's so easy to grip the bat too tightly too. We've experienced that lately, where even the, you know, the latest thing we've been working on, it's like, this needs to be perfect. And it's maybe like, you know, maybe we get to the end of a week of working on it and it's like, you know what, maybe we just won't put the song out. Maybe this isn't one that we're proud of. But it could have been the opposite.
Once you can get through the writing process, I mean, if I feel like the edit part goes, as long as you get it down and you can get it to a point where you're comfortable like going out and playing it.
Yeah.
I'm fortunate with my open mics that I can just like every time I have a new song, I'll just go and air it out a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, figure out what it needs.
I think that is definitely something we need because, you know, we've been like in a cave writing for a couple of years, but really haven't been playing out. And so we jump right in from writing to arranging and recording and like turning on the Logic session. And that's when our editing self goes crazy, is when we're like already thinking about production without having had the chance to air it out in front of a crowd and see if people respond. And
I mean, at the end of the day, like, yes, production matters, and having something that really like hits and is memorable and different and all the things that make a good production good, like, that's so important. But, you know, it really comes down to the song. If you have a great song, it doesn't matter what you do to it. You could write a song, just like chords on a guitar, a good solid melody, and you can turn it into practically any genre. Yeah. If it's a great song, it's going to land anywhere.
That's so true.
And is that something that you found when you get the chance to go to an open mic night and see what works, see what doesn't work, like feel like get a good feeling? Like, people responded to this, so I'm going to run with it, and other things you drop when you hear it out loud? Or
yeah, I mean, I it's all about the response. Like, because if someone connects with it, it means that I did the job well.
Right.
I mean, that's my perspective anyway. Some people, you know, they say, well, I want to write for myself. And yes, that's true. You are writing, you are expressing yourself, but it depends on what your goal is. Do you want the song to, do you want to be the only person listening to
exactly. it? Exactly. Is this just pure self-expression, or is this something you want to connect with?
You want, I mean, for me as a pop-oriented singer-songwriter, I want something that makes people, that gives them an experience. It doesn't have to necessarily, I'm not necessarily trying to write, you know, Paul Simon songs. I love that stuff. But, you know, sometimes it's just nice, like you can turn on the radio and hear a Taylor Swift song and you're just like, you know, it's a guilty pleasure, but like, shake it off. Like, I'll rock out to that a little bit, you know?
Yeah. If it sounds good and it feels good, it works.
Yeah. That kind of leads me up to a question we ask a lot, which is, what are your guilty pleasure listens right now?
Oh, man.
Which I have a million, so there's no judgment.
Dude, I don't know. I don't even know if I have guilty pleasures anymore. I just listen to
That's
everything.
It's a good place to be.
You know, I working at the Boys and Girls Club, I deal with a lot of, I experience a lot of rap music.
Yeah.
And I used to be very resistant to it because you know, I'm a singer-songwriter, and like it just that was never my scene. But you know, some of the music coming out, like it's once you get past like the idea of my way of doing things is right, which I was definitely guilty of for a long time. You know, these kids would listen to this stuff, and I'd be like, "God, this is such trash! It's like terrible."
I will show them the light.
It's horrible. Yeah. But then, like, you think about it, like trap music is like heavy metal rap music. Mm-hmm. And I think about what my mom would say when I was listening to Slayer and like just, you know, all the ridiculous metal that I was listening to when I was a kid. And it's the same thing. So I've tried to embrace a little bit more of that. You know, I might bump a little bit of that once in a while in the car.
Do you get the chance to record people at the Boys and Girls Club that are making rap music, hip hop?
Yes. I've produced many rap songs.
That's pretty awesome.
I actually recorded a few of my own verses.
No way.
You can't find them anywhere, but they exist.
I made sure. Exist
on a hard drive somewhere.
Do you do the production on those beats, or
do they get stuff
off of YouTube? Or
it's gotten to the point where we've got a couple producers in house that are really, really pretty stellar. So I actually have kind of backed off, and I just say, like, you guys do your thing because you know how to do this better than I do.
Holy smokes!
You know, it's one of those things that, you know, I could teach the mechanisms, but like I don't have the same ear. I'm not listening for the same things as these guys, which is, you know, it kind of goes back to like the whole producer thing. Like when I think about my songs, you know, I want to bring someone in who's got a fresh ear. These kids have fresh ears. They are what's next in the music industry.
Right.
Right.
So if nothing makes you too guilty, any like recent favorites that have come out or any new discoveries?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I've been gearing up for wedding season a lot. So, I mean, okay. I don't know that I have anything that I've discovered has been pretty much through that.
And your Spotify playlist is like the hits right now for wedding season.
I personally use Tidal.
Okay.
I like to support the artist a little more. The payout's a lot better from Tidal than it is through Spotify. But
I signed up for the free week trial when Kanye did the exclusive, but then I dropped it. And went back to Spotify. Yeah,
it's kind of nice. I don't know if it's true, but I feel like in some way that the streaming quality is better. Even if maybe what they say. I mean, they have the option to go lossless. It's $20 a month, but I just pay $10.
Yeah,
that's great.
So, I've been really, I've been shocked at how much music I don't know that's like classic stuff, like Motown. So much stuff that I just didn't know. And then,
we've had a similar experience.
Yeah, we're trying to put. I'm going to be playing at Faneuil Hall this summer, and I'm trying to brush up on the hits. We're trying to put together dueling piano stuff, and I put together the biggest playlist of any song that anybody might ever request. And that's every song I think, and someone will throw out something, or I'll hear something at karaoke night, and wow, how did I not
think
of that?
There are huge gaps in my knowledge, specifically 90s R&B. I got nothing.
Motown for sure for me.
So do you play a lot of weddings?
Yeah, I just got in with the Silver Arrow Band this year. So
we saw them.
Good on you. Did you audition or?
Yeah, I did it a couple months ago.
Good deal.
So I'm excited. I'm doing something like 12, 15 weddings this summer.
That's awesome. And you're just singing?
I'm doing a lot of things actually. I'm singing, I'm playing guitar, I'm doing PA and MCing a lot of these.
Okay.
That's awesome, man.
They're really impressive.
Yeah, they're really awesome.
It's nice. You know, just when you might get this a lot from a lot of artists in Boston that it feels like there's a ceiling for how high you can go in the music industry here. But every time I feel like I've kind of hit that, I find this other thing that's like, all right, well, here's another challenge. Like playing with these guys is going to be really cool because I think these are some of the best guys in, I shouldn't say just guys, some of the best musicians in the Boston area are, playing in this group. A lot of them plan on moving out to LA after this season. So it's like really cool to be able to get in with people who are this talented. Some of them will play with, some really great, I know they have a female singer who performs with Jay-Z. So being able to cut your teeth with people like that is pretty cool.
Well, speaking of that, of moving out to LA, is there a reason that you found yourself sticking around Boston as opposed to moving to a more classical music hub?
Well, I mean, I've definitely thought about relocating so many times. A lot of people, a lot of artists that I know from around here have thought about it. We talk about it all the time, I've stuck around mostly because, financially, it's nice. I have a job here. There's a lot of stability. I have a great community here. And also I feel like Boston's a great place, like I said, kind of on the wedding band subject, it's a great place to cut your teeth because, there's great players. Everybody's kind of young, still got a lot of energy, a lot of optimism. It's a really great place to get your skills up, and it's a nurturing environment. Everybody's very supportive out here. If I were to make a move, it would be, because I kind of felt ready to finally leave the nest, if you will.
As someone who's really dug into the Boston scene, is there any recommendations you have for people who are, just graduating Berkeley or maybe just about to drop out after two semesters of kind of making the most of the local scene?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's just like anywhere. It's all about networking and being someone that people want to work with, people want to hang out with. You gotta. It seems like such a simple, no-brainer thing, but working on just connecting with other musicians is something that really needs to happen. A lot of people that I know from Berkeley, were at Berkeley, went to school and maybe worked, but I didn't really see them out in the scene doing anything. I mean, that's not always universally the case. It's also difficult because, a lot of the places where music happens are 21 plus. But with that said, I think it's so important to at least dive into your local scene because, getting outside of that bubble is really important. You can learn, and it's not just learning how to network with other musicians, it's learning how to, pitch yourself for, for gigs at a bar or whatever. Yeah, I would just say work on how you're going to pay the bills. Honestly, that's a big thing, is getting out there and actually doing it right. A little bit.
Well, did you? Is the song that you were going to play for us? Is it The Cure? Is that what you're going to?
I hadn't decided what I was going to play just yet, but what do you guys want to hear?
I'm going to do a tune. This is almost always my opener tune, because it's just fun. I told myself that I always wanted to write a blues song, and it was just like super hard to do because everything feels like it's been done. And this isn't a true like 100% blues form, but it's pretty close. So I wrote this tune about it's obviously a chronic thing for a lot of songwriters to write about their exes and like former relationships or whatever. It's just relationships tends to be like the go-to thing. So this is a song about just kind of making the same mistake all over and over again with the same person, even though you kind of know you shouldn't be doing it. It's a tune called Playing With Fire.
I get a feeling that I should walk away, 'cause I can smell the smoke coming from the reaction the two of us make. It's gonna take more than water, babe, to tame my desire, 'cause I've been burning since the last time we tried playing with fire. Filled with gasoline, you're an open flame. It's like you're begging me to pour my love all over you when you call my name. I'd give you every last drop of it to take you up higher, till we crash and burn just like the last time we tried playing with fire. Oh, I know I should be keeping my distance, and I shouldn't stand so close to the blaze, 'cause every single time I get next to you, darling, my senses stop melting away. Then you kiss me and I crumble like a glacier falling into the sea. And I'm drowning in an ocean of your liquid heart of loving, and suddenly I can't breathe. Yeah. Other's eyes, we light up the night like we were two supernovas exploding in the sky. Yeah, yeah, you burn me up with such style, babe, and that I admire. And I swear this is the last time, though I know that it really ain't the last time. I never learned, so goodbye until the next time we try playing with fire.
Damn.
Thank you.